We're holding on page 56 in Megillah, by the top of the page, middle of Vayischol Pei. Continuing with the drushas on the Pesukim in the Megillah, the Pasuk says, after the first day in Shushan, where they killed 500 of their enemies, plus the 10 sons of Haman, so Vayomer HaMelech LaEsther HaMalka, so the king Ahasuerus says to Esther, B'Shushan HaBira Horgu HaYehudim, in Shushan HaBira, the Jews killed 500 plus the 10 sons of Haman. Imagine what they've done in the rest of the country, in the rest of the kingdom. And then he continues, and what else do you want? Amashay Losach V'Yinas in Loch. So the first part of what he's saying sounds like he's upset about it. That when he starts saying, what's wrong with you? What are you killing so many people for? And imagine how much in the rest of the country and in the rest of the kingdom. And then all of a sudden, he's speaking in a very conciliatory way. What else do you want? What else can I do for you? So Amar Rav Elazar, Rav Abahu, Malamach Ba Malach V'Sotere Al Piv. It means that a Malach came and smacked Achashverosh on the mouth. So he started Taka speaking harshly and angrily. And he's considering it's so much. And then all of a sudden, now he starts speaking in this gentle way, because now he was showing he was put in his place by the Malach. A few psukim later, when it summarizes what the Megillah is all about, it says, Revoyal Lifnei HaMelech, when she, Esther, came in front of the king, Omar, he said, Im HaSefer, with the Sefer, with the book, Yoshe Machshav Tehara. The question is, Omar, what do you mean he said it? It should be that she said, because she wanted that the Megillah should be written, as we learned earlier, that she wrote to the Chachamim. She asked the Chachamim, Kisvuni Ladoris. So Omer Rab Nachman or Rab Yechanan, Omra Loi, it means Omra, she is saying Loi to him, Yer Omer Bapem Ashakosa Basefer. There should be said verbally what is written in the Sefer, meaning that yes, it means that. Omar Ima Sefer doesn't mean what she is saying, and it doesn't mean what Ahasuerus is saying. It means that she's saying in the future, I want that Omar Ima Sefer, that it should be said with written scroll of what went on Purim. It shouldn't just be part of Kisvei HaKodesh and not read. It shouldn't just be said Baal Peh. It should be both. And Rashi explains, with the flow of the psukim. Rashi actually takes out the words Omra Loi, because still you don't really have that she's saying anything in context over there. What it is Rashi rather explains the flow of the psukim is the Kibbalah Yehudim Esa Shaychelu Lasses, and where they started to do what Mordechai had written to them. Why? What happened? Ki Haman ben Amdasa Hagogi Tzorek Al Yehudim Choshev Al Yehudim Abdam Over Voyal Lifnei HaMelech. And then when she came in front of the king, then the king order that they should write new letters, meaning that that Mordechai is telling everybody, celebrate Purim because of all of these events that happen, which are written in the Megillah. So not Omra Loi, Rashi takes out those words. The point is not that she said it should be done. The point is that Mordechai is telling everybody, every year you need to read this Megillah, which has the entire story from beginning to end. On the other hand, Rashi himself on Megillas Esther and different other Mephoshim talk about that it can mean that you can still keep the words. Omra Loi means that Esther is saying that Esther was telling Ahasuerus, Im HaSefer, Yoshe Machshav Tehara, new letters should be written out, and with that Haman's plot will be foiled, because we have earlier in the Megillah, Kichsav Hashem Nichta Vashem HaMelech Ein Mahashiv, so she's saying it's not enough that Haman was hanged, we actually need to send out new letters to counter, not so much to countermand, but to counteract the result of the other ones, because officially there's still the law, and in order to say that Jews should have the right to defend themselves, and that if anybody tries to attack them, then he's going to be in trouble, and he's liable to the death penalty, because otherwise the whole thing is not going to work out. So the Omra Loi is still the Omra Loi would still belong. The pasuk continues that they sent out, that Mordechai and Esther sent out divrei shalom ve'emes, words of peace and truth. So in the simple pshat, the Eben Ezra, for example, says, either Eben Ezra learns, based on analyzing the psukim over there, he says there was a period of time. So here, the first year when the events actually happened, yeah, of course, everybody celebrated on your Dalet everywhere else, and on Tesvav and Shushan when they rested. But then in the years after that, they got lax about it and weren't being careful to celebrate it. So now they're writing a Sigeres HaPurim HaZoyis HaShenis to encourage them, from now on, you really have to keep it every year and remember the nest for all time. So they're writing Divrei Shalom Ve'emes, they're writing in a peaceful, conciliatory way. Don't worry, we're not angry at you, we're not going to get you in trouble for having ignored it until now, but from now on, start doing it. So this is a few, according to the Ibn Ezra, this is a few years later. But now the Gemara is understanding not like that. Means that the Megillah, you have to score lines on the parchment so that you write the lines straight, just like the truth of the Torah, just like a Sefer Torah requires Sirtot, so does the Megillah. Actually, Tosfos elsewhere in Masechet Menachos learns that actually a Sefer Torah does not require Sirtot. In practice, every Sefer Torah has it, but in principle, if a Tosfos learns that if a Sofer knows how to write the lines straight, then he doesn't need Sirtot. Rather, Tosfos learns over there in Menachos, a mezuzah needs Sirtot regardless. Mm-hmm. And Amita Shel Torah over here means the mezuzah because that contains the basics of Yiddishkeit. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, and then which is the truth, the central truth of the Torah, and therefore that's what it means. Okay. The pasuk finishes off of Mama Esther Kiyam Divra Purim Ela. The word of Esther confirmed these days of Purim. Earlier in the pasuk, so the previous pasuk mentions Divrei Atzomus Vazakosim, just like they accepted on themselves, Divrei Atzomus, the matter of the fasts, Vazakosim, and the crying out, and then it continues a Mama Esther Kiyam Divra Purim Ela. So again, on the pshat level, Mephoshim explained that the Divrei Atzomus is not necessarily referring to the fasting in Megillas Esther. It's saying the same way as the Jews of that generation and the previous one had accepted on themselves to fast the four Taanias, Tisha B'Av and Shavuos of Tammuz and the rest of them. So the same way now they accepted on themselves the Yom Tov of Purim. But the Gemara is understanding that the Divrei Atzomus V'Zak Kosam refers to the fasting during the events of Purim, the 3 days fasting. So when it says Mama Esther Kiyam Divra Purim Eila, does that imply Mama Esther Ein Divra Tzemes V'Zak Kosam Loi? All that brought it about was Esther's words to Achshverosh. What happened to the Tzemes? Didn't that help? Didn't that contribute as well? And the answer is Amar Rav Yitzchak Ba'Ami Ochakam or different Girsa Amar Rav Yechanan. Yeah, it means both Divra Tzemes V'Zak Kosam. Mama Esther, both together, the fasts and what Esther said, between those two things, Kiyam Divrei Purim Ela, that's what brought about the Ness, and that's what established, and that's what they established the words of Purim. So in other words, Marsha says that Mama Esther could also be understood as meaning, like we learned before, that she asked the Chachamim to set up Yemei HaPurim. But it doesn't actually say in the Pesukim that she said to them, and only said that we learned earlier that she wrote to them. The Pesuk says, "Vatichdev Esther Amalka," and you have also Sholchalahem. So therefore, we have to understand that Mamer Esther means what she told the king how to counteract Haman Gzera. And the question is, that wasn't the only thing. Tzomus also contributed to it as well. And in fact, yeah, that's the answer. It means that both of them, Divrat Tzomus V'Zakosim. Mama Esther, between those two, the combination of those two things, Kiyam is Divrei HaPurim Ela. Okay, the last pasuk of the Megillah is Ki Mordechai Yehudi Mishnah LaMelech Achashverosh. Mordechai Yehudi was the second in command. He was the prime minister of King Achashverosh, the Gadol Yehudim, and he's great among the Jews. The Rotzu LeRoiv Echad. And he's desired and accepted by the majority of his brothers. Now, in a simple pshat sense, Mephoshim say the roiv can mean the many, not the most, but rather the many, the large number of Jews all accepted him. But the Gemara is understanding roiv as meaning roiv as opposed to kol. So Tana Rav Yosef, lo roiv echav, lo lechol echav. It means exactly that. Mordechai was accepted by only most of his brothers, and brothers over here means his fellow members of the Sanhedrin, the lo lechol echav, not all of them. From this we learn that some of the members of the Sanhedrin separated themselves from him, because now he's not full-time learning Torah anymore. Now he's involved. He's the prime minister, which means, so he's in that position in order to be able to help the Jews. But the fact is, as prime minister, he's going to be doing all kinds of other things in terms of government work as well. And therefore, they figured that that's not right of him to do. And therefore, some of them separated from him as a result of that. There's a sicha where the Rebbe tells, the Rebbe talks about, so what was Mordechai thinking, and what were most of the members of the Sanhedrin thinking, versus what were the miut of them thinking. So the Rebbe brings in that connection a story involving the Rogatchover, where at one point the Friedrich Rebbe wanted to get together a committee of Rabbanim to deal with things on behalf of the Jews of Russia, and he asked the Rogatchover to join that committee, and the Rogatchover said that whether I should join or not depends on a machlokas, the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, and since the halacha may be like the Bavli, then I can't. And he explained himself that in Masechta Brachas, it tells about the Chassidim Rishonim, who would spend a lot, would spend a large amount of their time every day davening. And And then, so the Gemara says, well, if they're spending that much time davening, what happens to their Torah? And the answer is Torah and Mishtameres, that Hashem helps, their Torah is preserved. But the Yerushalmi, when it says it, instead brings Tardasim Bracha, that there's a Bracha in their Torah. Meaning the Yerushalmi holds that they're able to increase in their knowledge of Torah, whereas the Bavli holds they're not losing out, but they're not gaining anything either. So the Roger Trevor says, if I now take my time to join this committee of yours, then I'm afraid, according to the Bavli, it's only going to be Mishtameres and not Misbareches, and therefore I can't do it. So the Rebbe, in that vein, explains the same thing over here. Mordechai is taking time off learning. Now, he's doing it in order to be in a position to be able to help Jews in the future. But the Mordechai himself and most of the Sanhedrin held like the Yerushalmi. Now, that's fine, and the Eibishter will still give him a bracha, and his Torah knowledge will continue to increase. But some of the members of the Sanhedrin, we're not saying they were choylik on him, we're not saying anything like that. The expression is pirushu mimenu. They stayed away from him because their derech in Avodah was more, and then their shitta was more according to the Bavli, that in that case, it's only Torah and Mishtameres, and therefore they disapproved of what Mordechai is doing. So the Gemara continues. V'omer Rabbi Yosef, Godol Talmud Torah, Yotzimat Solus Nefashis. We see that learning Torah is even greater than saving lives. Now, obviously, not when you have the Kuach Nefesh right on the spot. What we mean over here, like Mordechai, where he's there as the prime minister to preempt any problems in the future. And we see that with Mordechai himself. We see that originally Mordechai is listed after four other Chachamim. All of a sudden, Basar Hay. Later on, in another version, in a second version of the same listing, then he's listed after five. So in the first listing, he's listed in fifth place, and in the second one, he's listed in sixth place, showing that he had gone down a level in his knowledge of Torah. Me'ikraksiv, you have at the beginning in Sefer Ezra when it starts by listing the leaders who led the Jewish people from Bavel back to Eretz Yisrael when Kodesh made his proclamation, and it says Ashabo im Zerubbabel Yeshua. Nehemiah, Siroya, Re'eloya, Mordechai Bilshon. So Bilshon is a nickname for Mordechai because he was an expert at mixing up and understanding languages. But we see, in other words, that he's listed fifth. So you have so Zerubbabel himself doesn't count. Zerubbabel is the political leader at that time. He's the governor. But you have Yeshua, Nehemiah, Siroya, Re'eloya, and then Mordechai is the fifth one. So he's the fifth ranking one. All of a sudden, later on in Nehemiah, in the portion of Ezra that nowadays is named for Nehemiah, the list is repeated. That whole listing of all the Jews who came, of all the families who came to Eretz Yisrael, is repeated with some variations. Basically, Mephoshim say that Nehemiah updated the list according to things that had changed in his times. Rashi points out that there are 24 years between the two lists. Because the first one is when Kodesh first became king, then you have the years of Kodesh and Achashverosh, and then you have Ezra came to Eretz Yisrael in the seventh year of Dariush. And in between, the whole story of Purim happened in between. Marsha points out, now both of them are referring to the same event, but again, what it is Nehemiah, when he rewrote the list, he updated it with changes and things that had happened between one and the other, which is why you also have Mephoshim point out there are differences in some of the numbers between one and the other. There are some families where it says one number of people in Sefer Ezra, and then in Nehemiah it says a slightly different number because people had been born and passed away and moved back and whatever. So now, so in the Nehemiah portion, it lists the same list of Chachamim, and it says Haborim Zerim Bavel, Yeshua, Nehemiah, Azariah, Ra'amya, Nachmoni, Mordechai, Bilshon. So you see that, so Siroya Bapashtos had passed away in between, and then Re'eloya maybe is another name for Ramya, but whatever. The point is that, the point is, we're trying to have a share over here. So we see that Mordechai had gone down one rank, and now he's listed sixth. Showing, in other words, that because in between had happened all the events support him and he'd become prime minister, therefore he went down one level. Now, the Rif asks, given that we just said that Leroy Echov, that not all of the Sanhedrin approved of what Mordechai did, then Taka, why don't we learn from that Godol Talmud Torah Yotzimat Solus Nefashis? Why does the Gemara need to bring a different proof from the Psukim in Ezra and Nehemiah? And so he says, because that just shows that the Sanhedrin themselves would hold that that's more important. That doesn't show about everybody else. In that sicha, the Rebbe expands on that point and says again, because it's not so much we're not saying that what Mordechai was doing was wrong. We're saying that some members of the Sanhedrin held like the Bavli, as the Rebbe works out over there, based on the Rav Chava, and therefore that when they didn't approve of what he's doing. But to show as a definitive thing that Gadol Talmud Torah Yotzei Matzal Sefarshis, you can't really prove from that. You have to prove instead from the Pesukim in Ezra and Nehemiah. The next piece goes back to Daf Zayin Amud Aleph. There's a footnote over here that says that in earlier printings they actually had it. They actually had it in its place earlier in the Masechta, but it's supposed to be over here. So the Mishnah mentioned you have to give them matanah based on the pasuk, but you have to give them matanas lev yonim. So let's talk about the dinim of that. When it says sending monos in the plural, one person to somebody else, that means beis monos. So ademechad means you have to send two portions of food to at least one person. Or mishloach monos ish le'ehu, where re'ehu is in the singular, so two things of food to one person. Or matonis le'avyonim, and when it says you have to give matonos le'avyonim, that means beis matonis, the beis b'nei adam. Means two presents to each of two gifts of money or food or whatever to two different poor people. So the Gemara tells some stories involving Shalach Manas and Matanas Lev Yonim. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi Shalach Lev Rabbi Oshia Atma de Egla Tilsa. He sent to Rabbi Oshia, who was one of his Talmidim, he sent him a thigh of an Egla Tilsa in various places in Shas. Rashi and Tosfos discuss. Here Rashi explains Tilsa means Shlishi Babetan, that it was the third one born from its mother, which is the best quality. Different other places, there's different other possibilities that Tilsa means that it was one third grown when it's the tastiest. And then another point is that Tilsa may just mean high quality, because the Aramaic translation of Shalish, like you have the Shalishim Apollo, which means high ranking officers. So the same way Tilsa can mean a very high ranking, a very important piece of meat. Anyway, or Tlosa Garbi, or Garba de Chamra, he also sent him three barrels of wine, or the Girsa in the printed Gemara is one barrel of wine. Shalach Le, so Rab Oshia sent back a message to Rebbe, Ki Yamta Bon Rabbeinu, Meshleach Manis, Ishler Ehu, Umatonis Lev Yonim. With that, you've been Mekayim with us both things, Shalach Manis and Matonis Lev Yonim. Now, what's the Chiddush in that? So there's a lot of different, there are actually Hagoyis HaBach and Hagoyis HaGra actually in the Gemara take out the words of Matonis Lev Yonim. Because where's the Matonis Lev Yonim in it necessarily? He gave him, you can say he fulfilled with that Shalach Monis. In which case you can ask what the Chiddush of that. Of course, those are two items of food. So there are different possibilities that they talk about. There can be different Achronim talk about. It can be the Chiddush is that, how do we know that your Talmud is considered Re'ehu? Maybe Meshlech Manos Ishlu Re'ehu means it has to be somebody on your level. So maybe Rebbe sending to his Talmud, Rabbi Oshia, would not be considered that, and the Chiddush is that it is. Or maybe the vote is, the Chodesh brings this different other Achronim talk about, the Chiddush is that wine, which is a drink, can also be considered Monos. You would think maybe Monos means food, Davka. So the Chiddush is that it can include drink as well. If you have the Girso Matonis Lev Yonim, then there's also a few possibilities. One is that Rav Oshia was poor, and so the Chiddush is Taka, you can be Mekayim both things in that way. There's an explanation also that Marshor explains like this. One thigh of an animal would be you have to have a matona, has to be shir nesina. It has to be an important thing to give. So here he sent him two large things, much more than Rav Oshia personally would need. The rest of his family could eat from them also. Therefore, Rav Oshia is saying that Kiyamta Bonnu, with us, plural, meaning me and my family, you've been Mekayim both Mishloach Monos, because you've sent two presents, and also Matonis Lev Yonim, because you also sent for the Avyonim, my family, who are poor, where now they can also eat the extra amount above and beyond what would have been needed for Shalach Monos, and therefore that you're Mekayim that. In fact, Marshal says Avyonim, you can be Meramas, is Avubonim, a father and children, so here Rebbe sent to that. There are also the Rabbi Nachananel and some other Rishonim bring a different Girsa of the Gemara, that Rebbe had sent Rav Oshia one thigh of an animal and one barrel of wine, and Rav Oshia sends him back a message. Okay, with that you've been Mekayim Matonis Lev Yonim, but not yet Mishloach Monos, because Mishloach Monos has to be something significant. Then he sent him an entire calf and three barrels of wine, or no, the first time he had sent him a bottle of wine, according to the Segusa, and the second time he sent him a barrel of wine and a whole calf, and then he sends him, oh, now you've been Mekayim Mishloach Manos as well. Because the point is, Mishloach Manos, it can't just be, you know, you throw together, you know, one candy and one bottle and one can of soda or something, you know, you have to have a choshev kind of thing. So the Boshi was telling Rebbe, compared to your level, to send only a five, according to the Skirsa, to send only a five an animal and only a bottle of wine is not enough for it to be considered Mishloach Manos at your level. And according to that, that would be the chiddush of this story. Another example, Rabba Shodrele the Mori Bar Mar Biyodada Baya. Rabba one time sent Shalach Manos to Mori Bar Mar, another one of the Chacham of his times, through Abaya. We know Abaya was Rabba's nephew, and Rabba raised him. So now he sent Abaya as his Shliach with the Shalach Manos. He sent Meloy Taska de Kishvi. He sent a bag full of dates. And he also sent a tsana would be a basket, the other gives a kosa, is a cup full of dekim chadabishuna of flour from toasted grain. Rashi describes all over Shas, you have something called ployus, where they would take grain and toast it in the oven, dry it and toast it in the oven, and then sometimes they'd eat them as is, as a snack. Sometimes they'd grind it up to make flour, and it has a naturally sweet taste. So now he sent him a basket full of that. Omele Abaya says to Rabba, what kind of a present is that? Hashta Omer Mori Bar Mar. Mori Bar Mar is now going to say, when he receives that kind of Shalach Manos, he's going to say, like the expression goes, Ichakla Malka Lahavi, when a farmer becomes a king, the basket still doesn't go away from around his neck. And with a farmer, often carries around a basket and has it hanging from his neck. And here you have the guy becomes a king, and he still continues to act like he was when he was a farmer. The same way he's telling Rabba, you're a melech, you're a Rosh Yeshiva, you're a prominent Rosh Yeshiva in Kompadisa, which is one of the two great yeshivas of that time. What are you sending him? Such a thing, the kind of food that simple people would send. In other words, not the covered dick for your station. Maushal says he's kind of saying derech b'chusa. That he's saying that Fakert, he's saying important people, when they send a gift, it's not necessarily going to be such a large thing. A chakla, a farmer, to him, size is the most important thing. So he's going to be sending a full basket or a full bag or whatever. So he's saying, in other words, he's commenting on the size of the Shalach Manos, that on the face of it, the size seems more appropriate to something that a farmer might do, who's just impressed by the quality, by the quantity, rather than a chosh of a person who should be looking more at the quality. You find, for example, by Yaakov, when he tells the brothers to bring a present to Yosef, he mentions over there a small amount, ma'at sori, or ma'at dvash, etc. Because with choshiva people, it's not so much the quantity, it's the quality. Hodosh shodu le'ihu, then Mori Bar Mar sent back Shalach Manos to Rabba, Meloy Taska de Zangvila, a bag full of ginger, or Meloy Taska, a kosa de pilpul yarichta, and a bag or a cup full of long peppers. Omer Abaya, so Abaya also had a comment on the appropriateness of that Shalach Manos. He says, Hashta Omer Mar. Now he says to Mori Bar Mar, my Mar, which means my Rabba, is going to say, I'm not Shadris Lechuya, but you Shadr Lechurfa. Look at this. I sent him sweet things, the dates and the flour and the toasted flour, which are both sweet, but you Shadr Lechurfa, and he, you, Mori Bar Mar, are sending back something sharp. So again, Maushal says it was also kind of derech b'chusa, like you're doing davka, the exact opposite. In fact, he says it's very appropriate to your name. Your name is Mori, which is Maloshin Mar, bitter. So you're sending like bitter, sharp kinds of things. There are different other explanations what symbolism in all this was. One that's what Sfas Emes brings as a matter of halacha, maybe, that the point of it is that you should try, you should try maybe to send things for Shalach Manos that you think the other person doesn't have. So here, Rabba is sending things to Mori Bar Mar, and Mori Bar Mar doesn't reciprocate with the exact same kind of things, because he knows, obviously, Rabba has those. He's dafka reciprocating with other things that Rabba may not have, and that creates a greater simcha and a greater kiruv levavis, which is the whole idea behind Shalach Manos. There's different other points as well, including another one that each of them is symbolizing with their gift the qualities of the other one. We know that Rabba was oikar horim; he was very sharp at deriving halachas deriving one halacha from another. Mori Bar Mar was more of a Sinai; he was more of the kind like Rabbi Yosef. We find also in Rabba's time, who was a great expert in many mishnayos and brises and individual halachas, but not so much of the logical analysis of them. So therefore, Rabba dafka sent to Mori Bar Mar the sweet things, which represent more the ability to be a Sinai. In other words, with that, he's using that as a compliment to compliment Mori Bar Mar on his strength in Torah, and Mori Bar Mar in turn sends back sharp things to Rabba to symbolize his sharpness in Torah. And Abaya, according to that, then Abaya was a little boy at the time and he didn't chapsach the meaning behind it. Okay, the Gemara continues, Amar Abaya, ki nafki mi bei Mar. So Abaya says, you know, when I left Mar's house, Mar over here again means my Rebbe. When I left my Rebbe's house, Rabba, have a savain. I was full of chimatoy lahosim, but when I got there to Mori Bar Mar's house, krivoli shittin soy, the shittin minikdera, they served me 60 plates with 60 different kinds of cooked dishes on them. Sometimes we find in the Gemara that 60 is used just as a large indefinite number, although here Ben Yehoyada says maybe there was a certain symbolism in it. First of all, that there were 60 mesechtes, as we'll talk about another drasha on that in a second. So therefore they would do 60 dishes on Purim, specifically in celebration of that. And he says also because that way you would have like the nun of Haman's nefila going together with the samach of 60 dishes to spell out the word nes. Anyway, so they had 60 different dishes, he said. But actually, behind shitting plugi, I ate 60 portions of those. In other words, even though I thought I was full when I got there, in fact, I had enough. I had appetite for each one of them. But saw to be shul basra fortlet sleek data. Then it came to the plate on which they were serving the last item. They called it sleek data, which is a pot roast where you take the meat and you put it in a pot and cook it in its own juices. And still, even after eating from all the other ones, I was ready to eat even the last plate. So not only I'm ready to eat the sleep cater itself, but I'm even ready to eat the plate. So that's how hungry I still was. Marshall says maybe the plates were actually made out of sugar or something. So they literally were edible plates. So it's not a guzma to say that he might have eaten the plate. Amar Abaya, I know Da'amri Inshi. So Abaya says this is like people say, coffin anya v'la yodei, coffin ilay coffin. The poor person is hungry. A coffin is hungry, like called the Chvin Yesev Yechel, and he doesn't know whether he's hungry or not. In other words, I thought that I wasn't hungry, and then when they served all these foods, I discovered I really was. Inami, or another expression that people say, Rav Chol B'Sima Shchiach, there's always room for delicious food. So as much as I thought I had eaten before and that I was full, but since they were serving such delicious dishes, then I was able to eat from all of them. What? Which means appetite comes with eating. So it's a similar idea. Yeah. But Sam Sofer brings a drosha dicka explanation of it. It means Abaya is saying, I've been learning my whole life by Rabba. I thought that I knew that I know substantial amounts of Torah. Then I come to Mori Bar Mar and he's serving 60 different kind of dishes, representing that he has a chiddush to tell me in each one of the 60 mesechtes of Shas. The last one was Tzli Keder, which is a din having to do with the Korban Pesach, which is roasted. And he says, because after all, Purim is 30 days before Pesach, so it's the time to be learning about Hilchos Pesach. So I was ready to eat the whole plate. In other words, I wanted to not just learn the one vert that he told me on Hilchos Pesach, I wanted to learn everything of it. And therefore he's saying, so you see, a person may not even realize how much he's lacking. I thought that I knew so much already, and now I come to Mori Bar Mar's and I still discover how much endless depth there is in Torah. More about Purim and the Suda and everything. The Gemara says, "Abaya bar Oven, Rav Chanina bar Oven, Machlofi Suda Sayu LaAdon." These two Chachamim would trade their Sudas with one another. So Rashi explains it means that every year they would switch off who's going to eat by who. So one year Abaya bar Oven would eat by Rav Chanina bar Oven the Suda, and the next year they'd switch off and do it the other way around. In which case, then Marisha wonders, so then what's the chiddush of that? And why is that relevant for the Gemara to tell us? So in fact, Marisha explains, and actually so do many other Rishonim, the Rambam explains this way, and many other Rishonim explain that what it means is they were poor. They couldn't afford food for Shalach Manas and still have enough for their own Suddhas. So what they would do is they would send their Suddhas to one another. They each, Abaya Ba'oven would prepare food for his soda, he would send it to Rabbi Chanina Ba'oven, and that way he'd be Mekayim Shalach Monas with that, and Rabbi Chanina would send him back the food that he himself had prepared for his soda. So each one of them, that way, is Mekayim Mishloach Monas, and they still each have a Purim soda. They may have been brothers, I mean, they're both Ba'oven, so it's possible that they were brothers. So according to that, then that would be the point, and the Rambam brings that lahalach. If a person doesn't have what to give for Shalach Manas, then he should trade his Suda with somebody else. Ben Yehoyada, though, actually talks about that it still might be like Rashi is saying, that they decide each year they switched off every year eating by the other. But the point, the relevance of it, the Shalach Manas, is usually when you come to somebody's house unexpected, usually you're supposed to bring some food with you for the meal. So you would think that in that case, when you bring food with you for the meal, maybe it's only in order that the guy's not left without enough food for you. So then you're not Makayim any mitzvah of Shalach Manas with that. And nevertheless, the chiddush is that you are. The Gemara says, "Omar Rava, mechayev inish labasumi nafshi b'puria." A person has to inebriate himself, has to make himself drunk on Purim. Ad la yoda ben Boruch Mordechai v'Oru Haman, until he doesn't know the difference between Boruch Mordechai and Oru Haman. Now, there are probably hundreds of explanations what this means exactly. How does a person not know the difference between Boruch Mordechai and Oru Haman? So you have, among others, you have the famous explanation that they both have the same gematria. So it means when a person can't figure out the gematria between them, there's a vort brought from Rishonim that there used to be a piyut that ended with alternate stanzas of the piyut would end Oru Haman or Boruch Mordechai. So when a person is a little bit in his cups and he's not able to know where he's holding in the piyut, then he's Yotzadat. Tosfos, by the way, mentions in that connection, brings from the Yerushalmi, that if you're saying such a piyut, you can't just say Oru Haman and Boruch Mordechai, you also have to say Arura Zeresh and Brucha Esther and Arurim Kol Roshoyim, Bruchim Kol Tzadikim. So we're Yotzadat, and there you have all those lines in Shoshanas Yaakov that we say after the Megillah. That's why those lines are placed in there. Technically, the poem, really what it is you have a poem, you have a piyut that begins with the words Asher Heini in Ashkenazic Kehillahs. And in Veltish Ashkenazic Kehillahs, they say it on Purim night. Sheshanas Yaakov and Shuasim HaYisrael HaNetzach are actually the last lines of that piyut. It's an alphabetical order, and it finishes off with the Reish stanza, and then Sheshanas Yaakov and Shuasim HaYisrael HaNetzach are the shin and the top of it. The rest of that, Lohidiyah Shekol Kevecha, etc., is really only tacked on afterwards, and it's to be Yotze, what Tosfos is bringing over here from the Yerushalmi, to say Oru Haman and Boruch Mordechai and so on. Anyway, Maharsham mentions the point to not know the difference between Oru Haman and Boruch Mordechai is when a person doesn't realize the tremendous difference. Here you have Haman lost both worlds. He was hanged and lost all his fortune and everything in this world, and he ended up in a very hot place in the Olam HaEmes, and vice versa, Mordechai got enjoyed in both worlds. So to realize the tremendous difference between that is something when a person is drunk, he may not chapsuch of that difference. There's many, many other points. There's the idea. What's the more significant part of the Ness? Is it that Haman was killed, or is it that Mordechai was elevated? Which one is like the more important part of the whole story? So when a person doesn't realize that nuance, then that's what you mean that he doesn't know between Oru Haman and Boruch Mordechai. There's the idea that you go to a level beyond Das, to a level beyond which where Mordechai and Haman make no difference, and Oru and Boruch make no difference one way or the other, and you're ascending to that level on Purim. And there are hundreds of different explanations in all different planes, and in Pshat and Remez and Drush and Soid, of what all this means. There are, though, with that said, there are Rishonim, the Baal HaMor brings, the Ran brings, other Rishonim bring, that since the next thing in the Gemara is the story of Kom Rabbi B'Shachter L'Rab Zera, which we'll leave for tomorrow, Bez Hashem, then that indicates that the Gemara is saying with that the Halacha is not like the Rava that Chayiv Inish L'Besumim before you. Bichlal, by the way, you have a discussion among Achronim. What does Besumi mean? And how does it relate to the word Shichrus? Is Besumi more than average Shichrus? Is it less than average? Or is it the same? The Shalach HaKadosh, for example, and the Beis Yosef and a couple of others say that Lavasumi is less than Shichrus. Shichrus would be really drunk. Lavasumi means just a little bit and a little bit inebriated. Mashenkin, there are Achronim who learn the other way around. That the Bach, I think, and others learn that it means the other way around. It means it's more than Shichrus. And then you have ones who say that it's just another word for Shichrus. But anyway, you have Rabbeinu, or the Ran and the Balamur and others bring from Rabbeinu Ephraim that because next the Gemara brings the story of Kam Rabba B'Shachter L'Rab Zera, then that itself indicates that no, the Halacha is not like Rabba, and you should not be of a Summit before you, because you see what happened between Rabba and Rab Zera, which we'll talk about that in more detail Be'ez Hashem tomorrow. Someone once commented, you know, you see the difference between Yisrael La'amim in this, you know, among the Goyim being getting drunk as practically an art form by them. You know, you look at their parties imagine if they had a halacha chayiv initial of a sumi on whatever holiday of theirs, you know, what it would look like. Here we have a clear halacha, a clear statement in the Gemara, and here you have all the Rishonim and the Achronim are trying to find ways to mitigate it and hayitochen that it should be such a thing and try to understand it on some other level. Okay, Yom Yom Mashiach Gola. We have by the Mishkan where it says that you had yesedos, you had pegs that were used to you had pegs and you had ropes attached to the pegs. So Rashi explains that they tied the ropes to the bottoms of the curtains and then they stuck the pegs into the ground to prevent the curtains from blowing around in the wind. So you see, in other words, the Rebbe says this is a remez that when you have something, you have the Mishkan, for example, or anything else, that where every little detail, even the most chitzoniistic detail, is taken care of, then you can be sure that it's going to be something that's going to last. Just like we're saying over here, Rashi brings in that connection a pasuk oyo by yitzan by yisa. He said Yosef lanetzach, the tent will never collapse. Its pegs will never move because the pegs are firmly fixed in the ground, and they make sure that the Mishkan always stays where it's supposed to be. So therefore, the Rebbe talks about then in connection with Yoni Mashiach Gola, that this helps encourage us in the generation of Ikvas and Mashiach. We may be the Akvayim, we're the heels relative to the earlier generation. And we have to ask Achshu Dora, as the Gemara uses the expression, is our Dora more kosher than the earlier ones that we should be Zoycha to Mashiach? But it's Davka, our Avoda, with the last little bits of the Birurim, which is like the pegs that hold the edges of the curtains. That's what completes the Avoda that's needed in order to bring the Gola. Yad Mamash. Continuing on halachas of Shabbos, you can't wipe something on Shabbos with a sponge unless the sponge has a handle, because otherwise, just holding the sponge itself, inevitably you're going to squeeze water out of it. It would be psikresha. Another halacha, you're not allowed to spit any place where the wind is going to carry the spit away or scatter it or whatever. The Yerushalmi mentions that would be a toldah of the malacha of Zoy. Zoda has used the wind to winnow the grain, to blow away the shells and then straw and whatnot. So therefore, the Yerushalmi mentions that spitting into the wind would be a tolda of that. Another halacha is that girls are not allowed to braid or unbraid their hair on Shabbos. They can comb their hand. They can comb their hair by hand. As far as brushes, it depends. If the brush has very stiff bristles and it's inevitably going to pull out hair, then you can't. Because again, psikresha, if it's not so stiff, then you're allowed to, especially if it's set aside for Shabbos. And nowadays, Taka, they have softer brushes that are marketed as Shabbos brushes and Shabbos combs and things like that, which are Taka made in such a way that they're not going to pull out hair.